Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to welcome you all to today's All Sides Weekend, where we talk about books. This is our first book show of 2019, and it is a special delight to welcome our panel to talk about their favorite reads, what they've liked so much, what they want to recommend, and what they would like to make sure you know about. They are Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. Her blog, thelongestchapter.com, is essential for anyone who loves to read. Robin Nesbitt is the manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library and brings us our quick picks from the library every time. And I am delighted to welcome back to the show Nick White, associate professor of English and creative writing at The Ohio State University. Nick's novel is called How to Survive a Summer, which clearly you did, and his new collection of short stories, Sweet and Low. So, everybody, welcome. Belated, really. Happy New Year. We are back. We are ready to go. And I'm going to start with, since you're our guest, Nick White, I would like to say Happy New Year to you and to ask you to give us a book recommendation.
Well, Happy New Year and Happy Black History Month.
Yes.
I am recommending for my first book, a book that I am going to be teaching to my students in about 2 hours. It's called A Visitation of Spirits by Randall Keenan. He is a Southern writer like myself. The book is about this young boy named Horace, who is very much connected to the Black community in which he was born into and very much connected to the church. And as he reaches adolescence, he realizes that he's gay and that because of the experiences that he has, he realizes there might not be a place for him in his community anymore. And this becomes a crisis of faith, crisis of identity for him. And what's really beautiful about the novel is how well Keenan is able to evoke the rural setting of Timms Creek, North Carolina. The book sort of centers around Horace's journey where he decides he still wants to be in his community because he loves it so much. And so he convinces himself that he's going to turn himself into a bird and he's going to watch over his community that way because he doesn't feel like he will be accepted as himself. And so it's a very moving, beautiful, lusciously written book. One of my favorites. Had a huge impact on me as a writer as I was coming up.
Repeat, please, if you will, the title of the author.
A Visitation of Spirits by Randall Keenan.
When you talk about a book, a Southern book, a Southern writer, aside from the fact that from your diction I can tell you're a Southerner and you're a writer, what is there about writing about the South or in the South or being from the South that differentiates from someone like me from a colder northern clime or whatever?
I don't know if this necessarily differentiates from a northern writer, but I will say a lot of Southern writing has a lot to do with place. There's a connection to the place. Who we are is so inextricably connected to where we are from, and this is definitely true in Randall Keenan's book. There, the novel opens with this wonderful evocation of a hog killing, and it is both gruesome and beautiful, and you're reading it, and it's one of those moments in literature that we all ask for where you're reading it and you forget you're reading the book and the world just completely comes alive, and it's better than virtual reality. It's spiritual reality. He's really taking you into the narrative.
You've got me running to the library for that book, Robin Nesbitt.
Okay.
I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Thank you very much for that sale. That's a wonderful descriptive way around. But curiously as well, how do you choose a book that you want to teach, that you want to share with students? All the reading that you do because of who you are and your profession and because you're a writer, how do you hone on those books that you want your students in creative writing to know?
It's always a tricky business to teach books, because especially books that you love, because you're always running the risk that the class is going to hate them. And so I try very much to pick books depending on what I want to teach and the sort of like theme of the class. The class that this book is being taught in is not a creative writing class. It's a special topics in LGBTQ literature, and we are focusing on queer genre books. And this book is literary fiction, yes, but it also doubles as a kind of queer retelling because it's almost a queer retelling of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. Only it takes place over Halloween. And so that's what sort of drawn me to, that's the reason why I chose that book, this book, to teach to my students.
When was it written?
Well, it was written in the late 80s.
Okay.
I want to say it was published 89, 90. I'm not exactly sure, but I think that's the date. He has another book out that's really good, a collection of short stories called Let the Dead Bury the Dead, and it was a finalist for a National Book Critics Circle Award. But Randall Keenan is sort of known in the creative writing world. A wonderful writer. He's also an amazing teacher. I got to listen to him lecture at the Suwannee Conference in Tennessee a couple years ago, and just a gem of a person.
Thank you, Nick White, for that recommendation. I want to turn over to Cassie Rose, whose blog is thelongestchapter.com. It's very important for anyone who loves to read. And I wanted to ask Cassie, bring us your first recommendation here in February of the new year.
I think I'm going to – I have so many books here I would love to share. I'm going to start with The Frolic of the Beasts by Yukio Mishima. He was a well-known Japanese author. He died in 1970, and this is the first time this book was translated. And it's a common story about a love triangle, which, Christopher, we see in the opera all the time. But what he does with it is complex and fascinating. And he draws you in a way that you just don't know what's going to happen. So in the beginning, in fact, he reveals the end, but you don't know how it comes to the end of this couple that is married and this young student that the man is mentoring. And very early on, there is an act of violence because the young boy, the student who is being mentored, he sees that the husband is just sort of dismissing his wife and he's having affairs. And this is a humble, beautiful wife, and he just doesn't like it. And so there's an act of violence. I don't want to go into too much detail. And you think when you're reading that, oh, this is what the book's going to be about. And it's like, no, that's not what it's about either. Because what happens is something happens to the husband, and the mentor, I'm being very careful here not to give too much away, goes to jail. When he comes out, the woman becomes his guarantor in Japan. So he then is back in the family, but the husband is psychologically damaged. So then you get into the meat of the story, and I'm going to stop there. But it's the way that Mishima takes this common story, a love triangle, and works it so that you see these complexity of characters. It's not typical in that you don't really like the woman. You know she's beautiful, but you can see she's manipulative. And you feel like the boy is being manipulated, and you wonder why he's sticking around. And then you get to the end, and I'm going to leave it at that.
It does sound very operatic. It sounds like there's a lot going on in different directions. How does it keep your attention?
It kept my attention, one, because of the Japanese culture. Because, Nick, as you were talking about the Southern culture, when you are reading a book written by a Japanese author, and I am not well read by many of them, you are in that world of culture, of courtesy, of relationships. And also, this was taking place out in the countryside. So how it is that the village works. And that in itself drew me in because it was new to me. But other than that, it was what was going on in the woman's mind. Why is she doing what she's doing, and why is this boy caught up in her web? And that's what I wanted to. And then, of course, I knew how it ended, but I didn't know how it was going
to
get there.
That's where he masterminds this, right.
As well as that act of violence. You're thinking that wasn't the end. That would have been a good enough ending.
Right.
So that's what he's a mastermind in terms of the way he constructed it.
That's the key to hooking readers. It's not knowing the end. It's how they get there.
Right.
Give us again the title and the author.
The title is The Frolic of the Beasts, and it's by Yukio Mishima.
The Frolic of the Beasts, one of the best titles I've heard in a long time.
Good one.
Thank you, Cassie Rose. We are going to ask Robin Nesbitt now, who was from the Columbus Metropolitan Library Hilliard branch. Hello, Greg Dodd. Give us some quick picks. First of all, Robin, as I ask you every time, just briefly, what are quick picks?
Right. So quick picks are bestsellers, new books are usually released on Tuesdays. So we buy additional copies of bestsellers that are not on the holds list, reserve list. And so if you show up Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock, you might get your hands on a brand new book that you've been waiting on. They check out for 21 days, cannot be renewed. And it's been, I think we've done it now over 2 or 3 years, completely successful. It's just a great.
Oh, it's
great,
incredible. Yeah. Yeah.
Great service.
And sometimes you can be wonderfully surprised, but the book everybody is talking about is right there, but you better grab it.
Exactly. Exactly.
If you don't, somebody doesn't.
I made a woman's day the other day because she came up the steps and she'd just placed a hold on Becoming by Michelle Obama, but we had a quick pick and she squealed with delight.
Yeah, that's how I got it because I was number 1100 in your reserve for Becoming by Michelle Obama.
Right.
So give us a quick pick. What's really hot right now?
Well, one of them is really hot that my friend here, Nick, also has is Black Leopard, Red Wolf. This is what they're calling the African-American Game of Thrones. Marlon James, this is his third work, I believe, or second work.
I think it might be his fourth novel.
Fourth, I'm sorry. Okay. So but he basically, it's sort of like Black Panther. He looked around, he says, why is there not this great fantasy involving African mythology? And so it just came out this week, February 5th, and he's been interviewed everywhere. So Nick said you started reading it already, I believe.
Well, readers might know Marlon James from his Man Booker Prize award-winning novel, A Brief History of Seven Killings, which was a huge, huge deal in the literary world. Black Leopard, Red Wolf is in some ways kind of a departure for him because it's literary fantasy.
Right.
And it really takes on the myths and folklore of Africa and turns it into this wonderful, lush, beautifully written quest novel. It centers around this protagonist who is narrating the story, and all we know of his name is that he's Tracker. That is his name. And people say that he has a nose, meaning he has this supernatural ability to smell things and figure things out. And he is on this mission to try to find this missing boy with a gang of other kind of powerful creatures, fantasy-like figures. I'm only a fourth of the way through. So,
are you hooked?
I am hooked. And one of the great things about this writer is not just the story he's telling, but the language. I mean, he is such, just like on the sentence level, it's like eating a piece of pound cake. You can only take it a slice at a time. You can't eat the whole cake at once, or at least I can't anymore. I used to maybe, but it is just delicious. If you are looking for a delicious read, something that will keep you up at night, turning the page, but also cause little linguistic fireworks in your brain, this is the book for you.
And I will warn you, it's the first in a trilogy. So if you're like me and you get to the end, you're like, now I got to wait for two more. I've gotten to the point in life where I'm like, I just wait for all three of them to come out because I can't remember what happened the last one, right? So this is the first in a planned trilogy. So
title and author again.
This is Black Leopard, Red Wolf by Marlon James. It was a quick pick. And I don't think I even saw it on the shelf by the time I got into work. It was gone.
Just blurred away there.
Blurred away.
We are going to take a break and come back in 1 minute with more of today's All Sides Weekend Books. Don't go away. We are back with today's All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy with Nick White, with Cassie Rose, and with Robin Nesbitt talking about what's hot, what's out there. You know, it's cold again now. It wasn't cold for a couple of days. Now it's bitter cold. The days are getting longer, but it's still dark enough, and it's cuddle in bed with a great book season, and that's the kind of thing I want. Page turners, I want comfort. I want literary mac and cheese. I want something really you just can sort of get into and be comfortable with. But I did have a question. I wanted to finish up something with Robin Nesbitt talking about quick picks at the Columbus Library. We are in a contentious political time, shall we say, and I don't take sides here, but I'm just saying that there's a lot of dialogue and a lot of emotion out there now. And I know that some of the books displayed that are quick picks because everybody wants to read them will be on both sides of the argument. So
correct.
When you put up displays, do you ever get any blowback about books that are sort of sitting out there for the world to see?
We do. I mean, occasionally we get people that are upset. Why do you have all these Trump books? I come into the library to not talk about him. Or why don't you have more books about Obama? And I'm just picking some names out of the hat, you know, two big figures recently. But, you know, public library is there to represent all sides of a view. And so we do are very careful about curating collections that represent all sides of the view. And as a public librarian, I have my opinion when I'm not at work. But when I'm at work, it's all comers, all equal. We are reflecting the community. We reflect what people want to read. And people read right, left, center, all over the place. So we do try to be careful about what we put out. But at the same time, while you may not want to read it, somebody else may want to. And we take tax dollars. You know, we are a publicly funded organization, try to be good stewards of tax dollars and respond to the community.
Because I was just curious. I mean, I think the easier way to go, it shouldn't be easy, is just to put just fiction out there, but that's not the point, right?
No, because people read more than fiction. We have huge nonfiction readers and stuff like that. So, try to represent all sides.
I was just curious, about how that worked out there.
Yeah.
Cassie Rose, give us another recommendation, because I will tell you out there, America listening, that if you get a recommendation of a book from Cassie Rose, read it. So,
thank you. And that's a lot of pressure there. I am going to go with Christopher, what you're saying. You want the book that is the comfort book. You can't put it down. You want to sit.
A cold winter night.
Cold winter night.
Right.
And this is the book. And it came to me through a discussion with Robin and also with Mark from Half Price Books, because they have been working with me in science fiction.
Oh.
So this book was recommended, The Sparrow, by Mary Doria Russell. It's her first book. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a lot of conversation over it, whether or not someone did say they didn't know if it should even be classified just as science fiction. And I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell, this is that book, Christopher. And Christopher, actually, you would love this book.
Okay, I wrote
so,
it down.
It takes, there are two timelines, 2019 and 2060. And in 2060, what happens is this Jesuit priest comes back from having been on a planet where there was a whole group of people went to this planet because there was radio signals there. But he is the only one who comes back. He is traumatized, psychologically confused, and the Jesuits are all closing around him to protect him because the media is after him. What happened to other people? What did they find? Well, in 2019, then we get the story of how the mission started, the radio signals that came, the group of people that came together. But what you're also getting here is Emilio Sandoz. He is the main character, the Jesuit priest, and why the Jesuits take on this mission. And his belief in God, his struggle with it, how he going to the planet actually confirmed it, but then something happens where he comes back and he very much wrestles with his relationship to God and what is his faith. And so that's not what the book is about, but certainly the title, The Sparrow, if you know that passage in the Bible about
his eyes on the sparrow?
Yes, every feather of the sparrow.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is to say that Emilio Sandoz is that feather of the sparrow. This is a book that is just deeply involving because you get so connected to Emilio Sandoz and what he is doing. The friends that go up with him on this mission, they're engineers, there are other Jesuit priests, the friendships that are there, the people that they meet on this other planet. And that concept of also, like 3 hours on the spaceship is like an entire year on Earth. So when he comes back, he's still young, but everybody else has aged. It is deeply philosophical. There is great adventure in it. The characters are those that you can't forget. And it's just one of those great books that you want to sit by the fire and just keep reading it and look forward to it.
Now, it's interesting because you and I are not really sci-fi people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really a sci-fi person. But you said that this should be categorized in several different ways.
Yes. I think, you know, it's science fiction because it takes – there's a part of it that takes place in the future. Mm-hmm. And there are that imagined future society, other people. And so that's what makes it the science fiction. But all of it, the philosophy that is there, the adventure that is there, the people and the humanness of it from 2019, that all is recognizable to us. I think a lot of science fiction, you have to give up what you recognize on Earth, what your society is like, your comforts. We have telephones, we have computers, whereas in the science fiction world, it's a whole different language, category, items that people depend on. Like there was one book, and I forget what it was, Robin, that you recommended, and so did Mark, and I got 5 pages into it, and I was like, what the heck is going on? I can't figure. They were using different words, different frameworks. That science fiction, I just can't get into.
Many people do.
And they love it. Yeah. And I totally understand that.
Right, yeah.
For me, though, in trying to find my way into the science fiction world, and I have with a couple other books, and certainly in college, I read, you know, Brave New World, I read Aldous Huxley, I read all of the great science fiction authors, and never found my footing there. This book, as I said, is definitely a book that if for you to read because it's a really good story. Don't let science fiction take you away from it.
That's what I want, a really good story. So mm-hmm. it's the Sparrow.
It's just called The Sparrow by Mary Doria Russell.
Great recommendation.
And
thank you for that.
It's a follow-up to that. Mm-hmm. She wrote The Children of God, so it's a follow-up to that novel.
Is it just as good?
Yeah. This one's better, but The mm-hmm. Children of God's not bad. And she is an Ohio author. She lives in Cleveland, if I'm not mistaken.
She is. So, mm-hmm.
I feel very uneducated next to the three of you, but I will tell you that the book I enjoyed the most that I just finished reading is called Dakota Winters by Tom Barbash. It's a novel. Mm-hmm. When John Lennon was killed, I lived in New York in those days, and I remember walking by the Dakota that morning, the apartment mm-hmm. building where he was killed, where he lived. And it was 7:30 in the morning, rush hour in New York City, I think on a Friday, and there were mobs and mobs of people standing outside the building, and there was silence in New York City at that hour. And I never forgot that, the people just stood in vigil, but there was, I mean, people weren't even beeping their horns. There was really deadly silence right there. The novel, John Lennon is a character in this novel. It's about a family named Winter. Father is a kind of a Johnny Carson who had a nervous breakdown on TV and is trying to make a comeback as a talk show host. And Lennon and Lauren McCall, all the people who live in that building are their neighbors, and they come back and forth in it. And it is marvelous in terms of time and place. And I told my wife, Linda, we both lived in New York at that time, but we didn't know each other then. I said, you will recognize everything that we knew back then that mm-hmm. doesn't exist anymore. The Dakota does, mm-hmm. but the grocery store, the record, they're all gone now. But it was a wonderful read. The author is Tom Barbash, and it's called Dakota Winters. And I just
great.
Nobody asked me, but I'm just throwing
that
out.
Sounds
out.
Great.
That does
if
sound
anybody
good,
else
yeah.
wants to,
yeah.
But
wants,
I love books like that where you can recognize all
right.
the places that aren't there
yeah,
anymore.
Then, you're right.
Mm-hmm. That happens in like New York, Chicago.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Time travel.
So I wanted to ask you. I do want one more quick pick
okay.
before we turn to Nick again.
Okay.
Another quick pick from the library.
So I'm going to talk about this one because this book we've talked about numerous times. The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. Well, her second one is finally out. So it's on the come up. It came out this week as well. This one's a little different in that she's this is about rap and kind of an homage to hip hop. I've heard Angie interviewed a couple times. She is from Mississippi. She's got a lovely southern accent.
Fellow Mississippian.
Like Nick does. But she talked about how hip-hop was really a saving grace for her and how it probably doesn't get enough due in our world. And so this book is about a 16-year-old who wants to be a rapper. And I heard her interviewed or whoever read the book talk, as I haven't read it yet, I haven't been able to get my hands on it.
My wife won't put it down.
She
won't put
it
down. She won't let me even get near it because she said, you will take off with this book and I'll never see it again.
I know. So I'm going to have to go buy it, obviously.
Yeah.
I say that as a librarian, but I do buy books occasionally. But the person that was reading talks about how really difficult it is to construct a good rap. And I'm not familiar with that world. And so I think that's going to be really interesting to read about that world and how you construct raps and that kind of thing. So I think that there is an issue in the book. And what I liked about when I was listening to Angie talk about this book was that she's writing these books with issues, but she hopes she gets to the point where there are lots of books with black kids and black characters, and they're not just issue books, that they're just books about, you know. So it was really inspiring listening to her write and or read talk. And she was talking about also The Hate U Give was such a success. She was really having a hard time writing this one, and because she could just feel people looking over her shoulder, and finally she just let that go and write it. So sounds like it's you know,
yeah,
hitting the mark
on the come up. It's called
right
by
on the come up
by Angie Thomas.
Yep.
It's just a. By the way, I was interested to see, and I think this was true also for The Hate U Give. They're marketed for age 12 and up.
Yes,
yeah,
these are
marketed as teen books.
They are teen novels, but I mean, again, the way she writes, they're appealing adults, right?
Incredible. Yeah. And it was Nick White who turned me on, or turned us this show on to Angie Thomas. It was you who came into the show and talked about The Hate U Give when that had first been released, and said, "Do not miss that book."
She's a great writer, and I'm so proud to be from the same state as her.
Well, congratulations to both of you. Cassie Rose, you're going to give us, you gave us, I just want to review The Sparrow, because they're asking me to review the title again, because people are calling it The Sparrow.
It's The Sparrow by Mary Doria Russell.
Okay, don't miss that. Nick White, what do you have for us?
Okay, I'm going to shift gears a little, and I'll talk about a short story collection. It was just released, I think, in January. It's called Brides in the Sky by Carrie Holiday. Carrie Holiday is a professor at the University of Memphis. She has had a long and storied career, always publishing with small presses, mostly short story collections. I think she had one or two novels. I think her novel Mercury was published maybe 15 or so years ago. But this book, Brides in the Sky, it's a collection of stories, and it ends with a novella. And the title story, Brides in the Sky, is a historical story. It's about these two women living in Virginia right after the Civil War. And these two brothers come along, and they decide to go. The two brothers are wanting to go to the West and find their fortune, and these two sisters decide to hook up their wagon with them and follow them out into the West. And they each marry a brother, and the story takes place over many years. And it does that great thing that Alice Munro does, where it travels these great distances of geography and time, and you never feel like you're missing anything. I mean, she is just such a great storyteller. I read Brides in the Sky in one sitting. The stories were just great. I don't know any other adjectives to say. just really a wonderful, wonderful, talented writer. And I dare anyone to read that title story, because they come to a point in the story, and I won't give anything away, when the two sisters, who have been so close the entire time, have to make a decision, a very important decision about whether to split up or stay together. And it's the moment is just three sentences long, but the amount of emotion that Carrie Holiday is able to put in three sentences, it just feels like someone is punching you right in the heart.
Wow. Brides in the Sky, a short story collection by Carrie Holiday. Do you like, I know you write short stories, you've published short stories. Do you like reading them?
I do. Yeah? I do. I love reading anything.
I know, but what do you like about short stories specifically?
I like the concision. I like where that you can, well, I mean, if we go back to like Edgar Allan Poe, who has like these rules for short stories, and one of the things that sort of become big is like, in a good short story, you can read it in one sitting. Mm-hmm. That's like something he came up with, or something he said about the short story. And I like that you can read a story in one sitting. It might take you 2 hours if it's a long Alice Munro-like story, but you get the full weight, the full emotional impact, the full complexity of a novel distilled down into 30 pages. And it really, the writers who can do it really well are such soothsayers of language. It really is. That's why I enjoy it.
Soothsayers of language. You're good, man. You are good. Good for you. Soothsayers of books. Cassie Rose, what do you got for us?
I think next I'm going to recommend a book called Ghost Wall by Sarah Moss. It's a small book. It's only about 130 pages. Fiction. And it's about a family who's involved in a reenactment with the British Iron Age. Basically, there's the father of the family. He's a bus driver, and he is into ancient history, and he's a little obsessed by it. So he joins an archaeology professor and the students, and they go into the countryside in Northumbria and he's bringing his wife and his daughter along, and they have to, for 2 weeks, live as if they are the hunter-gatherers in the Iron Age of Britain. The tension in this book begins very early because there are a few pages where the author writes about what were called the Iron Age bog people. Mm-hmm. So she sets up, I'm not going to go too much into it, but she sets something up so it feels very tense. But then we get into the story and it's narrated by the daughter, Sylvie, and what they're doing, et cetera, et cetera. And the professor is really pretty easygoing about it. I mean, he's wearing socks, tennis socks with his moccasins, and his students are in nylon tents. And one of the girls is out getting chocolate bars at the local store. But the issue here is that the father is so obsessed by it that he is strong-arming his daughter. And you can see that there is another story here. Through Sylvie's viewpoint, that's how we start to get it. Her fear of her father, his obsession goes beyond her, and you know that there's probably abuse going on. But there is this girl who's going to the store to get chocolate bars, who is self-confident and outspoken, and she becomes very aware of what's going on and is the salvation in the story. It's well written. It is not in any way deeply disturbing. What it is sort of is, I don't know that it's a fable or an allegory, or I don't know what correct word to put on it, but I think that Sarah Moss is doing something here whereby to say we're going into the primitive world, but look at how in the current world some of the things are still holding true in the behaviors of people.
Some things never change, right?
Some things never change.
Give us the title and author again.
It's called Ghost Wall by Sarah Moss.
Ghost Wall by Sarah Moss. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a very quick break and come back in 1 minute. Don't go away for more of All Sides Weekend Books. We are back for the final segment of today's All Sides Weekend Book Program. I'm Christopher Purdy. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. Nick White is Associate Professor of English at The Ohio State University in the Program of Creative Writing. Robin Nesbitt is the Manager, Director, Boss of the Hilliard Branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library. If you have a recommendation or want to talk to our book panel, you can call 614-292-8513 or send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. Give us another quick pick, Robin.
Okay. Well, we've talked a lot about this guy, and he publishes a book about every 6 weeks. James Patterson's got a new one out in February on the 19th. It's called The Chef. This is set in Mardi Gras, and there's murder, of course, going on. In addition to Patterson, that's on the 19th, Jonathan Kellerman's another big name in the mystery world. He had a new book come out this week. I love it. I was just reading this description. I didn't realize. It's summoned to a rundown former strip joint. Dr. Alex Delaware, who is one of the main characters, finds himself crashing a wild Saints and Sinners themed wedding reception. So I think, quite the page turner. And then a chicklet also came out this week. Sophie Kinsella, I Owe You One. Sophie writes a lot of, I think she's either Irish or British, but she writes a lot of kind of fun, books about, and this one's something about family. Her dad's Fixie Farr is the main character.
Ooh, I like that name.
Right.
The Mardi Gras strip club sounds like a wedding in my family in Boston. I mean, it just sounds like that's a Saturday afternoon where I come from. But
So we've got The Chef by James Patterson, February 19th. Jonathan Kellerman is the wedding guest that came out this week. And then Sophie Kinsella, I Owe You One, that also came out this week. So quite a few things coming out in the winter, which I think goes back to what you're saying.
Very popular artist. If you really want a great read and just want to revel in.
Right. sometimes
and sometimes
you don't. I mean, there's literary reads which, you know, enliven the mind, and then sometimes you're like, you know what, I just want to turn the page.
I want to track and out and have fun. Some fun.
Exactly. Right.
I call those Calgon books. Remember though, Calgon, take me away.
Right.
Take me away.
You know? Read for everybody. There's a book for everybody.
I cried when Dominic Dunn died. I don't care. Anyway, let's Nick White, you have a book by Hanif there that I want to talk about because he's been a guest on this program, and I'm a big fan of his. Many people are. So,
Columbus's own, Hanif Adurkib. It's called Go Ahead in the Rain, Notes on a Tribe Called Quest. I am about halfway through. It is just beautiful. I love his writing so much. Columbus is so lucky to have this writer living here. He is such a literary force in the city. He brings such great writers here. But this book is already a New York Times bestseller. It deals with this writer's fascination with the hip-hop group A Tribe Called Quest, but it's also deals with his relationship to his father. And the first chapter is so beautiful. It talks about his attempt to connect with his father through music and the ways in which they speak and don't speak to each other. It's just such a great book, and I'm so glad, so deserving of the attention that it's getting right now.
Are these essays or a memoir? How's the book set up?
This is a memoir because it's divided into chapters, but there comes a point too where he starts to write letters to the members of A Tribe Called Quest, and that's also interesting.
Because I knew nothing about hip hop culture because I'm far too old and for any reasons like that, but I learned a lot from his first book, and really I was riveted to that book and was very, very interested and was listening to things I'd never heard before, and really was just, I was on the voyage of discovery that I missed 45 years ago when I should have had it, but you know.
Well, you know, A Tribe Called Quest, I think was started in the late 80s and was really big in the early to mid 90s. And I didn't know much about them either because that's when I was like knee deep in my Reba McEntire phase. And so, but you don't need to know anything about them. Like the book is really just a love letter to them from Hanif, and it shows the intersection of his fascination with them and how it impacted his life, and it's just I just can't recommend this book highly enough.
Give us the title and say his name again because it's a wonderful name to say. On
Hanif Adurkib.
Yes.
And the title of the book is Go Ahead in the Rain, Notes on a Tribe Called Quest.
And Hanif is a Columbus. I don't know if he still lives here, but he's from here.
He still lives here. Yeah,
he grew up here. He was a student at Capital University. He had, I think, a soccer scholarship. And a wonderful, wonderful life trajectory there. And I'm glad to have that recommendation. We are talking about books today, All Sides Weekend Books. We've had a lot of recommendations so far. We've covered science fiction, short story, literary fiction. James Patterson, who, as Robin Nesbitt said, writes a new book every 6 weeks. Claire Kinsella, quick picks at the Columbus Metropolitan Library. We know that Michelle Obama's book is still going like hotcakes.
Yep.
6 months after its publication. You can't keep it in the shop.
Nope.
And the quick picks at the library, the new shelf goes up Tuesday mornings, right?
Yeah, the quick picks.
Is that in every branch?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Every branch. So 9 o'clock in the morning, if you can't find what you're looking for, holler at one of us and we'll go see what's they don't get checked out quite at 9 o'clock. But if you want to see the fresh offerings, 9 a.m. when we open is when you'll find them.
But I'll tell you what, always make sure when you go to whatever branch library you go to check that shelf.
Yes.
Because you will be surprised sometimes and find
great
things.
Stuff there.
That otherwise you'd be 6 months out of getting right there in your face, which is the point of the quick picks.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Educated is on the quick picks. And we've talked about that all last year.
Yes.
You still can't get your hands on that one by Tara Westover.
I just finished that book, Educated by Tara Westover. I
love that book.
I didn't quite get it,
really?
I have to tell you. That book, she kept going back for more abuse, and I got mad at her. I mean, I just thought.
I think it's a psychology that
hard
to understand.
It was
unless,
hard for
right,
me.
Unless you're in it. No,
she doesn't need my help. God knows. I mean, that book is just going everywhere. And
right.
I'm the only person I read it who went, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It's on my list. I haven't read it yet.
Yeah. Well, I'll be very interested to hear what you think about that.
The thing about reading. It's all individual, right?
All subjective, you know. I didn't like Moby Dick. We've had that conversation.
Well,
let's not go there.
Let's not go there.
No, I got in trouble once. I got a phone call about that. But Kathy Rose, comfort us now, Kathy.
Actually, I'm going to talk about a book that came out a couple weeks ago, The Current, by Tim Johnston. And actually, he is going to be at Gramercy tonight in conversation with Andrew Welsh Huggins.
Oh, right. Great. And his new book is out, too.
Yes. And this book, The Current, it's really good. It's a crime story, but it's more along the literary lines. And it starts with an accident, two girls coming home to Iowa during the snowstorm, and their car goes into the river. And there's a question of whether or not there was another car that tapped them in the back and pushed them into the river. You think that's going to be the crime of the novel, like what really happened, but it's not, because one of the girls does die, and I'm not really giving anything away. One of them survives. And this opens up a 10-year-old cold case, because 10 years before, in that small town, a girl died in the river, and the one who survived here had this vision of seeing her. So it's well written, and it's the characters are well done, the tension is well done. So anyway, this cold case opens up, and it's this young woman actually becomes a Nancy Drew in a way. Her father could not solve the cold case. It was and he has died. So all these things I'm rattling through are just elements, but Tim Johnston knits it together very well. I want to say it's a page-turner, but I don't want to say it's a page-turner along the lines of Gone Girl. I think there's a difference in a lot of mysteries and crime novels where you do want to turn the page here to find out what is going to happen. Why is it that this person is doing this, or this is thinking this, or how are they going to come together? He does that very well, but it's not potato chips, like we would say. It's something that you want to keep reading.
It's sausage dip. It's a little more.
It's an avocado dip. Artichoke dip.
Yeah, right. There we go. So I think he's done a great job with it. And you know what? I have to point out something. I'm a person that reads acknowledgments at the end of books.
I do too. Yeah.
Yes. And I have learned to not to read them before you finish the book, because sometimes in the acknowledgment they will thank someone or say how they got information. And you're like, oh, darn it. Now I know what's going to happen, because they talked to this fire expert. But his last line in his, this is the acknowledgments of thanks. Finally, to the person holding this book, whoever you are, thank you for being a reader of books and for reading this one in particular. You make it all matter.
Wow. Thank you for that.
Isn't that neat?
Now, he is going to be tonight at Gramercy Books in Bexley.
Yes. I believe it's 7 o'clock.
With our friend Andrew Welsh Huggins.
Yep.
Who writes a series of mystery books, among other things. I mean, and his latest one is... Andrew, if you're listening, call and tell me the title, because he emailed me last week about it, and I don't have it with me. But they are set in Columbus very often. They are very specific as to time and place, and they're very riveting. So,
And it should be a great conversation tonight. Yeah. I'm planning to go.
You also are there a lot. You host literary soirees there yourself.
I am, and I am doing it on March 12th. For this book, The Volunteer by Salvatore Scibona. It is his second novel. The first one, The End, was on the list for the National Book Award. So this is highly anticipated. I have not finished it yet. I am still reading it. So don't know really what to say about it. I'm sort of being hesitant here. I want you to come on March 12th to Gramercy and hear the discussion.
Well, you need to love this book because you're going to interview the author, right?
Yes, absolutely. Well, okay. What's fascinating to me is much of it is set in Vietnam, and I think he's probably in his 30s or 40s. So I'm very curious to find out, how did he get this right? Because he does get it right, the Vietnam right. Because how did he get the sounds right? The being there, right?
Do you remember the book you and I talked about? And you'll remember, I don't, that the gentleman who wrote it was a Vietnam vet, and he wrote the book in his basement over 30 years, the novel.
Matterhorn.
Mm-hmm. That was brilliant. Remember
it
that?
It was brilliant.
And we had him on the show. It was incredible. Mm-hmm. But he said his wife and children didn't even know what he was doing down there.
Yeah, until his book. 30 years.
And it took him 30 years to write it. Marvelous book. There you are. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, Nick White. Yes.
I'm going to give you a choice, Christopher Purdy.
Yes.
Vampires or post-apocalyptic?
Wow. I'm going to go with post-apocalyptic.
Okay. The book that I read over the holidays that I am absolutely in love with is Severance by Ling Ma. This is about a young woman who is working in Manhattan. She works for a publishing company that produces specialty Bibles. And as she is so involved in her day-to-day, the bureaucracy of that job, that she does not necessarily pay attention to the fact that the world is falling apart around her by this mysterious Shin fever. I won't say any more than that. It's just a really, really interesting book, especially if you are interested in sort of the materialism of the millennial culture right now. There's this idea running through the book about nostalgia and the power of that to cause people to lose their minds. And it's really, really riveting and really well written.
It sounds like when I lived in New York 40 years ago. It sounds great. The more things change. Because I remember being a youngster living there for years and thinking anything could happen in this town, good or bad, in the next 5 minutes. Anything like that. And having that sort of sense of wonder and foreboding at the same time when you're 23 and all you want to – never mind. But, tell me about the author. Do you know
her? Ling Ma, I know that this is her debut novel, and I also know that it won the Kirkus Prize, is a huge prize. It was just recently – I think it's not that old of a prize, but it's $50,000 if you win that. Yeah. And so that was, like, huge. It was reviewed in the New York Times, and I could easily imagine this being made into an HBO limited series.
Severance by Ling Ma.
Yes.
Okay, terrific. How about another quick pick?
Okay. This one has been out for a while, but it's another one where we just can't keep it on the shelves. It's Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens. Reese Witherspoon picked it for her book club, and it's also going to be adapted into a movie set in North Carolina in the 60s. Handsome Chase Andrews is found dead. The locals immediately suspect Kaia Clark, the so-called Marsh Girl. So it's a little bit of mystery. It's set in the South. I think anything that Reese touches anymore is magic. Currently, we have over 600 holds on it, and it's been out for a while. So we bought more copies. There are books like this that are – I've never heard of Delia Owens, you know, but they get – people start reading them. They get word of mouth. And so I like the fact that Reese has started a book club. I think
Sarah Jessica Parker.
She's also done a book club. I think it's really interesting that these women that are famous for being actors are our readers and then putting really good stuff out there. So almost in the like Oprah, we've sprung out some more women.
Sarah Jessica Parker actually has an imprint.
Oh, that's right. Right. So it's kind of fascinating. You think, oh, they're just actors. They're just a pretty face. And yet they're serious readers who are trying to push books and push writers that you've never heard of. So Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens.
Well, I don't mind telling you that about Jenna's book club. Jenna is my daughter's cat. Jenna has a book club that lives on Facebook, has its own page.
Cool.
That quite seriously is reviewing very, very good books. She was very big on The Hate U Give.
Okay.
She will do the next Angie Thomas book as well. So do check out Jenna's book club. Why else have a show if you can't plug your own family there? And Cassie Rose, I want to give you the last word.
I'm going to recommend a book called Madonna in a Fur Coat. I'm going to butcher this name. He's a Turkish author, Sabahattin Ali. Very, very popular. It again was just translated. It just came out in paperback, and I've been having my eye on it for a while. Great story about a young man who is sent from Turkey to Berlin, 1920s, and he's supposed to be working in a soap factory to learn the industry for his dad, but he goes to the art gallery and he falls in love with a woman in a self-portrait, and he meets her, and they become... just falls in love with her.
He meets her as one does when
one just walks in the street. Anyway, something, and it's very unique in the way that they do meet. But what is going on here with the story is it's a looking back because he is an older man at this point, and it is being narrated by his associate at his work firm, and he is wondering, why has this man turned off? Why is he just accepting everything? It doesn't fight with anyone, just goes in and does German translations, goes home. It seems very sad, and he wonders, who is this man? Well, the man gets sick, and he says, go to my office and clean out the desk, and he finds finds this notebook. And in the notebook, he reads the story of how he meets the Madonna in a fur coat. And then we find out what happened.
What year does that take place again?
1920s.
That is a great title, Madonna in a Fur Coat. Mm-hmm. With that in mind, with the fur coats in mind, because it's cold out, I have only time to thank Cassie Rose, WOS's book critic. Don't forget thelongestchapter.com, which is her indispensable blog if you love to read. Nick White is always indispensable. He is on the faculty of The Ohio State University. He's about to go and teach his LGBTQ course at 2:20 this afternoon. His novel is called How to Survive a Summer. His short story book is Sweet and Low. And Robin Nesbitt, no show without you, and quick picks from the Columbus Library. Thank you all for listening. Keep reading. I'm Christopher Purdy. Thank you, Kyle McKinnon, our producer. Keep reading. Bye-bye.